Hello, I'd like to talk to you today about the unjust steward. And this is a perplexing parable. And it's funny that right after the unjust steward, we find the parable of Lazarus and the rich man, which is another perplexing parable to some people. Now, if you look at Lazarus and the rich man, the true reason, the major point of that was a problem with the Pharisees and their coveting money, and the message that the Bible really has on that. And we find a similar message here in the parable of the unjust steward in Luke chapter 16 from about verses 1 through 15. The problem again is this issue around money. And again, the Pharisees were covetous of that. We'll see that when we read this. And Jesus was giving them a message with a message that sometimes seems confusing to people, because it seems that the unjust steward is using shady business practices. And again, that's not what Jesus was promoting here, okay? There's another deeper meaning within this parable, and let's try to unpack that as we look at Luke chapter 16, beginning in verse 1. Now, I'm reading from the King James Version. It says, Luke 16, verse 1, "And he said also unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward," or a manager, "and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, How is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward." So the manager, the steward of this particular business owner, was involved in some things that maybe weren't too on the up and up. And now the business owner is calling him out on it. And here's what the steward says to himself in verse 3. "Then the steward said within himself, What shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig, to beg I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses." Now, what he's saying is that, hey, I can't dig, I can't do physical labor. He's saying also that he's too ashamed to beg. So he's got this idea that the debtors of the business owner, that they will help him out once he develops this scheme of letting go most of their debts. They're going to help him out once they find out that he's in trouble, having lost his job as a manager for this business owner. So notice verse 5, Luke 16. "So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him, and he said unto the first, How much owest thou unto my Lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, Take thy bill and sit down quickly and write 50. So he's going to drop that debt down. Then in verse 7, he said to another, How much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, Take your bill and write 80. So this is a lesser amount that is going to be owed. Verse 8, "And the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own?" Verse 13, "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." And the Pharisees also, who were covetous, heard all these things, and they derided him. And he said unto them, You are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts, for that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of God. Now, let's get back to this parable, and I'd like to talk about it a little bit here. And let's talk about the debt, first of all, the amount of debt. Now, the amount of oil debt in this example that we read in the parable was an annual yield of a large olive grove. The debt involved with the wheat debt that we read about was a half share rent for 200 acres. In both cases, that's a large debt that this steward is diminishing for the debtors who owed this particular lord that he was working for. Now, some other points to make about this parable that we may not understand is the steward was still thought to be working for his master, okay? So he was still under the master's control, in a sense, as we read through the parable. And the second thing is the master could not take back the alleviation of the debt because it would have hurt his reputation to take that debt and make it the original debt that it was. So that would hurt his reputation. So let's look a little bit closer now, having said that, at some interpretations of this particular parable. Now, some had an interpretation that the rich man here, or the Lord, represented Satan. Therefore, the actions of the steward were praiseworthy. But again, that's not likely the answer here, because in many parables, the master is usually God. Okay, is a representation of God in some way. Another interpretation of this parable is that the master is a rogue taking unfair advantage of a slave. Now, again, there's a problem with that interpretation, because when we look at verse 13, it says, "No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other." So again, this was a servant working for a particular master. Now, the two masters in this, if you think about it, the one master was the Lord that was over him, who he was working for. But the second master became, it could be a couple things. It became the debtors in one sense. It became the steward himself. He wanted to take care of himself if he was going to get fired. So now he's serving his own interests by reducing the debt. So you can see a couple different examples of two masters in that story. And that's not always a good thing, because when you got two masters, then, you can't always please the one or the other. There's going to be some hypocrisy involved in what you're doing there. So again, these are some things to be thinking about as we begin to look a little bit closer at this particular parable. Now, another angle on this parable is an Essene angle. And if you remember the Essene community, that's where we found the Dead Sea Scrolls. So that was another Jewish community of believers, but they went out into the desert because they believed that they were set apart from the rest of the believing Jews, the Jews who believed in God, that they were special, and they set themselves apart by going out into the desert and setting up their own community there. And some believe that there is an Essene angle to this story. Now, no doubt about it, there is the angle of the Pharisees here, where Jesus is deriding the Pharisees, as we read in verse 13, 14, and 15. Let me pick it up in verse 14. "And the Pharisees also, who were covetous, heard all these things, and they derided him, and he said unto them, Ye are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts, for that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of God." The Pharisees were covetous of their wealth, their power, their position, things like that. And in this series of parables prior to Luke 16, you'll see the parables that come before that in the preceding chapters have some angle on the Pharisees and their love of their power, their riches, their money, and things of that nature. So this story is definitely getting at that, because we're going to see that, well, let's look at it in verse 8. And the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. So again, by giving money to these debtors, letting them keep some of what they owed, they were getting a blessing from this. That's the bigger picture here in this message of doing good with money, or money that you can control in some way. Yes, the unjust steward was being unjust with his Lord, his master there, but he was being kind and gracious to the debtors here, and that is the bigger point here. Again, when you look at this story, it says in chapter 16 of Luke, verse 1, there was a certain rich man which had a steward. And as you read through there and go down to verse 7 or verse 8, it says, and the Lord commended the unjust steward there. Again, the Lord there could be God there instead of the master. Again, as we read the master here, the master is the rich man. And as we go through this and read it closely, the fellow that he was working for was also called his Lord. So again, some people confuse this. Is this talking about the Lord God, or the Lord his master here? Most likely it's talking about the Lord who was his master here, commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. And now, how was this wise for the Lord? Well, it was wise for him because he would have a great reputation now amongst these debtors that had owed him money. And this message would be passed on to other people that this guy is really a just guy. He cut the debt down of these individuals, so that would gain him a good reputation. So there were two people, three people that could have been gaining something from this whole incident. Okay, the Lord, who was the business owner, he was going to gain a great reputation here. The unjust steward was going to have, once he lost his job, he was going to have these debtors who were going to want to repay him in some way. And then the debtors are also getting something in this deal. They are having to pay less of the debt that they owed. Now, having said all that, again, that answers a lot of questions about this particular parable. Jesus was not trying to say that being a shady business person is a good thing. That's not what he was saying at all. There was a meaning within this story, a deeper meaning than this surface level way of looking at the story that some people take. But there's been more research done on this parable, and a guy named Brad Young wrote a book about parables, and he mentioned in that book some further research that was done that revolves around the Essene community that I mentioned a little bit earlier. And again, the Essenes were this group out in the desert. They believed in God, but they thought of themselves as better than other people who believed in God. And what we get in verse 8, let's take a look at what verse 8 says to see how this Essene angle might play a part in understanding this parable also. In verse 8 it says, and the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. Now, what's interesting about verse 8 is this phrase, the people of light, or the children of light, that is mentioned there. That's the only time that phrase is mentioned in the Synoptic Gospels. Why is that relevant to the Essenes? The Essenes referred to themselves as the sons of light. Now, later Christians also called themselves the sons of light, but in the first three Gospels, the Synoptic Gospels, that terminology is not used of Christians, okay? Jesus mentions the Christians as being merciful, poor in spirit, peacemakers, but this concept of them being called the sons of light is not there. So is it possible, again, you know, lots of research, different ideas on this parable, is it possible in verse 8 that the children of this world is different from the children of light, wiser than the children of light? Comparing the children of this world to the children of light, there's a difference there, and the children of light are looked at in a negative light in this particular verse. Now, as we continue through there, notice verse 9. Another interesting word is used here. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. Now, that's alluding to the fact that he gave these debtors some of their money back. You know, it wasn't a proper thing to do. That money was really owed to his master. But the mentioning of mammon of unrighteousness, we see this also in verse 10 through 13. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust in much. Verse 11, if therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, interesting phrase there, we're going to look at that, who will commit to your trust the true riches? The true riches are eternal life, of course. And verse 12, if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is not your own? So what is not your own is eternal life. That's a gift from God through the grace of God, okay? And then verse 13, no servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Okay, now, why do I emphasize the terminology there of mammon? Well, here's something to think about into understanding this parable maybe a little bit deeper. The Essenes believe that money belonged to those outside their community, and they deemed money the mammon of unrighteousness or the wealth of unrighteousness. They did not look highly upon business transactions in the world, okay? They had what's called a manual of discipline, and it was written for those in the Essene sect. And what it said that they had to pledge to love the children of light, which were the Essenes, and hate all children of darkness, those who are outside of their community, anybody outside of their community. Again, they were a cult in a sense. You know, if you don't believe as they do, that, you know, you're nothing to them, okay? So you had to actually pledge to that if you were part of this Essene community. Now, why is that interesting? They hated to do business outside their own community, and they would only take part or involve themselves with outsiders in simple cash purchases. They didn't have any business dealings with the outside Essene community. Outside of the Essenes, there was no business dealings with that community. So this is important to recognize this. In verse 11 here, Jesus seems to think that worldly wealth can be used. Notice what is said in verse 11. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon. So, you know, the unrighteous mammon, according to the Essenes, was the wealth of the world, the business transactions of the world. You know, how people bought and sold and how they used that money. He says, if you can't be faithful in that, who's going to give you true riches? And in this story, what is happening? The unjust steward is finding a way to make everybody happy. He made himself happy. He made the debtors happy. And in a roundabout way, he made his Lord happy, because his Lord would get a great reputation within the business community that, wow, this guy reduced some debt here. You know, they know he's not going to do that all the time, but he's got a heart. He will reduce debt in some cases, and that would give him a better reputation among people. So this could be a dig at the Essene community who did not interact with the outside world. They were stuck in their little bubble, and they would not interact with that outside world. They thought, you know, this was unrighteous mammon, that we shouldn't take part in business dealings with the outsiders. Now, to conclude things on this story, I want to look at some other things to just think about in relation to this perplexing parable, because some people get confused by it, because it seems Jesus is promoting an unjust steward, when in actuality he's not promoting him. He's just using him as a character in this story, which has a deeper meaning. Okay, so here are some of the points we can get out of this story. What we got to understand is this: both Jesus and the rabbis, the Pharisees he was teaching, taught that a person of faith is characterized by charity and good deeds. So again, the unjust steward was doing good for the debtors. The unjust steward, in a roundabout way, was doing good for his Lord and Master, okay? And he was doing himself a good deal, because the debtors are now going to take care of him when he gets fired by his Master. Point number two, and probably the most important point, is giving away money is a favorite theme in the folklore of Jewish piety. So again, if you get back 2,000 years ago and understand how Jews could understand you were a pious person, it was within their folklore that you would give away money. This was a theme that was used to show that you were a good person, you were a pious person. And again, what is happening in this story? Money is being given away, okay? So we need to look at that and the positive action of that for the majority of people in this story. That is the greater point, not that he was being shady and not doing right by his Master. No, that's just part of the story. Let's look at the deeper meaning that Jesus wanted people to get out of this, that taking care of people, providing them funds when they weren't expecting it, you know, that's a greater thing to do for people. The main point of the parable is the steward helped others, and that's what's good. The Master, again, as I said, gets a good reputation out of this also. But was there a swipe here at the Essene community also? They focused on themselves only and not the outsiders. They felt that they were predestined and others were not. Just like the Jewish community also believed that they were God's chosen, that the Gentiles were not. So we see that theme involved with Jesus within you know, the scriptures of the New Testament. Could this be going on here with the Essenes because of the language there, the use of that mammon of unrighteousness, how that phrase might have been used in the Essene community, and again, how the Essenes looked at people, and the fact he's mentioning the children of light here, and that was something the Essenes called themselves. Some other things are to love others more than money, and people's needs come before money. Okay? The greater good was accomplished here, and that's what is most important. So hopefully I've shed a little bit of light, pardon the pun there, on this parable of the unjust steward, and keep that main point in mind. How can I help others in my community? What can I do? Can I give them food? Can I give them money, clothing? Can I just lend an ear to them? These are things we want to focus on and remember, so we can be true children of God's light.